everyone. Thanks for joining us for another episode of Lid Radio Podcast. I'm your host for today, Francesca, and for this episode, we have Dan White. Now, Dan White is a marketing connoisseur, established thought leader, and independent brand consultant. He carries a 25-year career as a CMO, a methodology specialist within the Insights division of Kantar. In today's complex and commercial environments, marketing has become a central aspect to every successful business. Businesses require effective marketing and branding that move beyond the standard forms of brand orientation and commercial interaction. The Smart Marketing Book is a practical, reliable, and concise title that offers the core marketing principles applicable for anyone who wishes to improve their organization's financial and creative values. It's a straightforward guide that avoids unnecessary and time-consuming practices. So Dan, talking broadly about marketing, I mean, often it's seen as a luxury or something that can be sort of taken out and cut, or a bonus if a company has the time or money. But it's quite clear, I mean, reading the book, that it's the epicenter of business. As a marketeer, and sort of based on the book where you go through this a bit more, what do you see as the purpose and the opportunity of marketing?
Well, I definitely don't see it as a luxury, that's for sure. I see that, you know, the fundamental purpose of marketing is about enabling just businesses to make more money. You know, it's all about making sure the business is providing, you know, products and services that people actually value, and making sure that people hear about these products and services and find them compelling. So I think, you know, it's almost like a central part of the business, really.
I wonder why do you think that it has been sort of viewed as this sort of like luxury element to a business? I wonder why that's happened.
Well, I think that one of the issues with marketing is that it's quite hard sometimes to prove its value.
Yeah.
To quantify it, you know, and a lot of businesses are run by balance sheets. And if you can't guarantee the return that you'll get from something within a very fixed time frame, you might not get approval for it. I've certainly found that in my own career. So it's kind of like it's the lack of proof and evidence that can get in the way, I think.
Yeah, it's not a tangible sort of numbers on a sheet situation.
Well, it can be. It can be. It's just those disciplines of how you quantify the effects are relatively new and not fully established. But certainly that's the way marketing is going.
Sure. Actually, you go through that in the book as well, sort of measuring the success of marketing. Are you able to talk about that now?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think fundamentally, a big role of marketing anyway is to build a brand that people really love and value. So a good way to quantify the impact of marketing is to see how perceptions of the brand are building, thanks to the marketing activity, for example, and then try and relate that directly to sales and profit.
Yeah, and actually branding is one of the sort of really key areas you cover in the book. But why do you think is it important for a company to have like a strong brand and brand image? And how could a company kind of define their brand and sort of tailor it?
Well, I think, I mean, just the idea of having a brand and building a brand is actually extremely helpful, because we know now that the brands can maximize both sales and profit. That, you know, you can achieve more from the product and services you deliver if you have strong brands. And by strong brands, I mean you've managed how people perceive those brands. And the way I think about it is like, you know, a brand is kind of like, it's whatever comes into people's heads when they think about or come across the brand. And if what comes into their heads is lots of vivid and positive memories and feelings, then those people are more likely to actually choose the brand and pay the asking price. So you can see that is how the concept of building that brand in the first place can enhance, you know, commercial value.
Definitely. I mean, do you have any sort of examples of that you can think of where, you know, there's a brand and sort of you do have those positive images and memories of it?
You know what? As soon as you said that, automatically I thought of the most cliched examples that everyone trots out, like Dove and Amazon. I'm desperately trying to think of something a little bit more original. I mean, I've worked with a lot of brands over the years, and some of them are not as massive as those brands. But you can see that the successful ones are the ones that have had this sort of consistent, clear idea of what they wanted the brand to stand for, and the kind of tone as well, and the emotions they wanted to create, and built it consistently over several years. Oh yeah, I can think of one actually. I used to work for a brand that was called Olivio originally, and then it was changed to Bitoli later on in its life. A margarine brand made of olive oil. Have you come across that one?
Yeah, I've heard of it, yeah.
So I worked on the very early days of that brand and learned a lot about how to build a brand, really. And obviously that was owned by Unilever which is one of the best, you know, companies you can hope to learn with and from.
Yes, definitely. I mean, what would you say? I mean, you go through actually more in the book, but you talked a bit about sort of the memories you get from hearing a brand's name or seeing their logo. Yeah. And there's a lot in the book, and I know you've written recently an article about it, about sort of how senses play into that. And I think that's a really interesting thing to talk about. It's a multi-sensored experience when you engage with a brand, whether it's, you know, online or offline. But yeah, it'd be good to hear your thoughts.
Well, I think it's quite a big debate at the moment, actually, about the extent to which, you know, the experience is important, you know, and like you say, an experience is very rich and positive when you come across the brand. Maybe you're in a showroom of a car and you're looked after well, and it's gleaming and clean, and the car smells gorgeous, and all these things. They're all clearly going to have an impact on your perception of the brand. But it's also important to remember that what is important is your memories of that, because it ultimately, when you're making a decision at a later date, it's what you recall about a brand, what comes to mind, that will influence you or not influence you, you know, to actually choose it. So yeah, I'm a big fan of actually making sure that every touch point that people come across when they're in association with your brand is as compelling and positive and a nice experience, because, you know, those emotions that you have there will connect themselves to the brand. Associations are built, they're just built like Pavlov. I think I refer to this in the book, actually, don't I? You know, how, you know, so long as you understand the concept of Pavlov's dogs, then you understand how brands are built.
Yeah, of course. And I do want to continue the quickfire and ask you, what about how you would deliver the brand in market?
Yeah, I mean, I do think of it as a two-stage process, really. I mean, there's defining exactly what you want your brand to stand for, because you've done the research. You know that if you can forge those associations in the brain, then people will want to choose you, you know. But you're right, the key is then exactly how you execute that in market.
Yes. I
think that people often underestimate the importance of innovation.
Okay.
Making sure, people think, oh, innovation, that's different from marketing. It's not. It's really actually crucial. The role of marketing is to define the innovation that then gets developed that consumers will really value.
Yeah.
So that's a fundamental role of marketing that mustn't be overlooked. Because if you have a strong product, a superior product, this gives you a huge opportunity for charging more and selling more compared with weaker products that inevitably, in the long run anyway, tend to fail in market, you know, because competitors deliver against consumer needs so much better.
Yes, yeah, that's so true. So
innovation is obviously a key one. But I guess the other big one, of course, is then communicating. And it's even better if you have got a superior product, then actually communicating about it will just accelerate the benefit you get from having that good product, because you're making sure that its superiority is appreciated and understood through your communications. And I mean that in broad sense. You know, something I always really stress when I'm working with clients is that if you've got a really good product, you know, a really good product, then the most important thing is to tell people about it and to get it into their hands. Yeah. Sampling, for example. I mean, I've been boring all my friends and colleagues trying to get them, to see a copy of this book before it's launched, because I'm proud of it, you know, and it's true of any product. If it's good, get it out there, you do sampling, get tasters, whatever your product is, so that it gets appreciated and gets the word out.
Definitely. I mean, it seems so simple, but actually, yeah, as you said, innovation is so key, because...
Yeah.
It just almost gives you a head start with everyone else. I keep hearing the phrase in my head, like, you can't flog a dead horse. What's the phrase?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, I've got another one, but it's slightly ruder, so I won't mention it. But yeah, it's polishing. But you know that you probably
know.
It's true. You know, if you've got a poor product, you can advertise it as much as you want. And actually, you'll just be, oh, there's another idiom coming up. And throw good money after bad. You just won't get that return. And I think that's important. You know, measuring the return on investment is something I major on in the book, trying to think in terms of always money in and money out when you're thinking about marketing.
And I wonder if there's almost like an education piece around marketing. So, I mean, I've sort of been in those companies where it's been seen as the luxury, as the thing that, you know, oh, if we have time, we might do some. And because it's not been tangible, I wonder if there's like an education piece around its value.
Definitely an education piece about the longer term, the time of the return you get from different types of marketing. You know, I mean, obviously in a launch situation, you get a quick return because you're getting the product out there. You're getting it off the shelf if it's a packaged goods or whatever, which then fulfills itself. But a lot of advertising, for example, the benefit you get, the return you get can be very extended over time for established products in particular. You know, when you think about it, some advertising can last in memory and influence decisions for months, years, decades even, after the money was spent. You probably won't remember this, Francesca, but I remember PG Tips advertising from the 70s. It featured chimps, which was acceptable at the time, and but eventually was not appropriate. But they were incredibly compelling and humorous adverts. And people of my age can still remember individual executions that haven't been aired for 40 years or so. So you've got to remember that's exerting obviously a diminished influence, but you've got to think of this communication will set the brand up for ongoing sales, and you need to factor that in, assuming of course you've got the cash flow in your business to allow that kind of longer term return to be factored in, of course.
Sure. And I guess it's also just building up that legacy and going back to the branding, the point of view. Yep. That actually it all links together.
And the consistency side of things. I mean, that campaign ran for decades, and the in fact, a lot of the most effective campaigns are the ones that they've evolved over time, but they've had a strong DNA throughout. You know, they have certain elements or themes or aspects of advertising that is, you know, like a stick of rock through them all over time. And we know, because of how the brain works, that makes actually advertising more efficient and helps to build those incredibly vivid, powerful mental connections that influence sales. So yeah, getting back to branding.
I mean, I do want to talk more about what's in the book, and that you do have a lot of sort of frameworks and illustrations. Sort of almost every page has a different diagram. Yeah. It's a very visual, yeah. A visual kind of practical book. Why did you include so many, and why are they so important to you?
Yeah, I mean, you probably noticed, yeah, I'm a big, big fan of visualization, visualizing things. So I've drawn about 200 or so different visualizations, and 75 of the best ones actually made it into the book. So that's almost, you know, one or two per chapter sort of thing. The reason is, it's really because I'm a very visual person. You know, in meetings, I'm always scribbling diagrams and doodles to help me think and remember. And I still refer back to them now. Actually, I've still got a whole pile here of old notebooks. And I have started to do it on my iPad at last, so I'm not completely out of touch on that one. But I think that a good illustration is a great way of helping to communicate and to remember complex things. They can make complex things so much easier to get your head around. And you know, in a world of business where there's so much focus on long documents and words and numbers, I just think there aren't enough visuals. So I've made it's a bit of a passion of mine to use them, to leverage them.
Yes, definitely. I actually wonder whether it's sort of like an occupational hazard of marketeers is to be a visual people. So it's probably going to work quite well.
Well, I hope so. Yeah, I'm hoping. I have had a lot of feedback that people love a good. They say, "I love a good framework." You know. Or I do a lot of posts on LinkedIn, and it's usually, in fact, the visuals that grab people's attention and get the conversation going and help people to understand the more detailed copy that I put with it. But, you know, that was definitely one of the motivations for doing the book, is to share some of these visuals that I'm quite happy with.
I mean, aside from sort of the visuals, the words that go alongside it, you cover so many different range of topics in the book. So there's everything's from like marketing responsibilities, brand development, which we've talked about a bit, innovation, communications, measurements. I mean, there's so many. For anyone looking to kind of relook at their marketing or begin their marketing journey, is there somewhere they can start, or is there kind of a core area that they'll need to be looking at in order to reinvigorate a company's marketing or branding?
Well, I guess there's a couple of questions there. I mean, I think the way it was designed is it's a comprehensive guide. You know, it is meant to help someone, for example, who might be, you know, initially new to the business, new to the profession, to get their head around the whole lot. If you wanted to do this in another way, I'm not sure how you do it. That's kind of why I wrote the book, which is, you know, you'd have to read so many diverse articles and so many business books that are about a very particular niche or topic or angle of marketing, that it's quite hard to sort of see the big picture and see how it all fits together. So in a way, if I was new to the profession, I think the book, you'd literally read it through. So you'd cover all 10 chapters and have a rounded understanding of all aspects. And I think that probably relates to your other question. You asked if you were an established brand or marketeer and you wanted to focus on something. I think you need that rounded understanding before you can establish what it is in terms of marketing that the business should be focusing on. So again, I would, it's not the kind of book, it's not meant to make a particular point about one specific angle. It's meant to give you an overview of all the best practices and latest thinking, all in one coherent, I was going to say gestalt, that sounds so, you know what I mean? It all fits together.
Yes, definitely. And I actually think it's quite interesting as well. So I've sort of been dipping in and out of it over the past few days as well. And as someone in marketing, I keep coming back to different bits and saying, oh, I would never have thought about that bit like that, but actually that's quite interesting. So even sort of as just something to dip in and out of, it's really interesting to kind of get fresh ideas or different ways of thinking.
Yeah, that's the kind of feedback I'm getting more so from the more seasoned marketeers that I've talked to. I mean, the way I'm guessing what's happened is over the past 10 years or so, marketing has evolved so much that everyone has got, it really has, especially in the sort of media side of things, that everyone has got at least, one or two sort of black spots, things they had never quite got their head around. Mm-hmm. So I think this is quite a good way, a very good way to fill in those gaps. And like you say, the diagrams are the things that can often make people think about something in a new way or give them a new inspiration if they're challenged by a particular topic. Yeah. Yeah,
and actually that's talking about how much our marketing has changed. I'm going to talk a bit about your thoughts on digital or online marketing compared to offline. So do you think offline marketing is a bit more redundant now we're in such sort of a digital age, which is, so full of, cookies on every device that's, sending you sort of targeting ads and all this kind of thing? Do you think offline is redundant or is still a place for it?
Sort of. I mean, offline sort of becoming redundant, but more because almost all channels are becoming online. They're connected and start to have be interactive and be able to deliver more targeted, experiences. But it's not really the point, I think. I mean, the point is if you're choosing the right communication channels for your brand, you start with your brand and its audience and what they consume and what messages you want to put across. And then you find the channels that are good value, essentially. You want to get to a good number of your target audience at a good cost and have a good impact for that cost. So, even if there was still a traditional channel that was delivering against that, then of course, why wouldn't you use it? And actually, some of the digital channels have a very flash, but don't necessarily give you a better return or not. I mean, the best ones, like I think you just alluded to, are the ones where they're using the fact that they're online to be able to target better, and therefore you have the opportunity, at least, to tailor your communications to different subgroups if that's how your brand operates. If you've got segmented audiences, that's particularly helpful. So that's a bit of a long-winded answer and a bit of a yes and no, but I'm a big fan of whatever's the thinking being, use whatever works and is good value and has the impact on the brand and the business that you're looking for.
Yes, definitely. And I think actually it's quite interesting that like the best brand experiences I have always been an offline experience where I've been to a shop or I've been to an event or I've been to a restaurant and you tasted the food of this place that I saw an advert for on my phone. Like, it's always been the personal experiences that I think always have a better impact.
We know, because those kind of in-person experiences can be incredibly impactful. And, I remember, I'm going to use Apple, of course I am, I could use an example. But, I remember there was a lot of surprise when Apple announced it was going to open a whole series of shops around the world, to promote its goods, because they were a company that had, didn't need to do that, was incredibly successful without it. But they were right. And actually, not only are those stores themselves exceptionally profitable, I had a quote once that they were the second most profitable per square foot of stores in the world. But also, they, like you said, the experience can be very powerful. The feeling it gives you about the products, the ability to interact and try them out was pivotal to their continued success. So yeah, I think you're right. There will always be a role, for, certainly for some, you know, for many bands, of having to those offline, real world interactions.
Definitely. And I think they can play into each other, really. I mean, if you've got a great personal offline experience, that is often then captured and put online. So I get I think they'll always probably play into each other.
Exactly. There's one of the, that reminds me of one of the diagrams in the book that talks and shows, you know, there's a diagram for how all sorts of different channels kind of feed off of each other, you know, how one plays into the other. And a really clever communication strategy will think through in advance, how is this channel going to interact with that channel or drive audience to this or shape perceptions so that, you know, these other activities are more effective. I think that's one of the things that's changed in marketing over recent times is putting it all together in a clever way, because there are more channel touchpoint opportunities for brands. And I think that's a whole new area of people who've got this sort of overview of all the different opportunities and good combinations that work well.
Exactly. And yeah, if they want to find out more, pick up a copy of the book.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, I hope so. I really hope so.
I mean, speaking of which, for anyone that wants to know more about the book, obviously they'll come to Lid Publishing website if they want to see. But in terms of you and your work, where can they find you?
I think the best way to touch base with me is to connect via LinkedIn. The only problem is that I checked actually earlier and I counted 40 different Dan Whites on LinkedIn before I gave up counting on page 8. So I've just added to my headline on LinkedIn, author of The Smart Marketing Book. So hopefully that'll make it a little bit easier for people to find me. But actually, having said that, I'm also happy to receive direct emails from anyone via dan.j.white@me.com.
Dan, thank you so much for joining us today. Thanks for everyone for listening as well. And don't forget to keep an eye on our social media at Lid Publishing on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram for more information about new books, experts' opinions and more podcasts with experts such as Dan White. See you next time on Lid Radio Podcast.